I'm Julian G. Simmons, and this is Our Gen Pod. Welcome back, everyone, and for those of you who are new to our podcast, welcome. In this episode, we return to our series on friendship. And as my old friend Catherine Ryan Hyde reminds us, friendship can take many forms.
Friendship, a little bit of a tricky topic for me because I'm an extremely introverted person and do very well in isolation, spend a lot of time on my own. I have friends, I have human friends. I tend to be a step more removed from them in most ways than I am with animals.
What?
And then it occurred to me that my animals are my friends. I mean, where is it written that a friend has to be human if you're a human?
What, good God?
So my friends, my animal family, which is like a chosen family of friends, are Soul, a horse who is 16'3" and whose withers come up to my forehead.
Hello, my beautiful God.
Opal Moon, a mini horse who stands 32 inches at the shoulders, which is not even a yardstick. My dog, Chloe. And an older cat named Jordan and a new kitten named Gabriel. And they get along well with each other and they're a fabulous family. And I don't kind of feel the need to have that step of remove from them. I do value my human friends. Julian has been a friend since I was in high school. He was one of my really good high school friends, and I honestly think it's fair to say that my high school friends saved my life. I mean, I was pretty at risk at that age. I don't know what I would have done without an accepting group of friends. So I'm not devaluing humans, but most of my best friends have fur.
As Catherine has just shown us, friendship is not limited to our relationships with humans. Friendships of all kinds are the antidote to loneliness, an affliction that can lead to serious depression and even shorten our lives. The U.S. Surgeon General says loneliness and isolation represent profound threats to our health and well-being, and animals can give us the core component of friendship. Unconditional love. They don't judge us, they reward kindness with affection, and they can fill the void left by lost loved ones. Truly, as the saying goes, a dog is man's or woman's best friend. For us, the phrase pet owner just doesn't do it. There's a word in Hawaiian, kahu, that we think fits a little better. It can be loosely translated as guardian or protector of something precious. Rather than the term pet owner, kahu can mean that a person and their pet are connected on a spiritual level. First responders know how important our animal family members are and will go the extra mile to save them from fire, floods, or earthquakes. They get it. Animals matter. Other professionals who get it are, of course, our veterinarians. Our own beloved vet, who had cared for our cats for almost 40 years, recently passed away, and his memorial was overflowing with those who, like us, relied on his gentle, caring touch. He loved our cats. He calmed them and saw us through those dreadful days when we had to say goodbye. Vets are angels to us, and that applies to our next guest, veterinarian Pete Kiesling. Pete is an old friend of our director, Rob Wilson, and there's a familiar pattern to their friendship that I bet many of you can relate to. Pete and Rob could have been good friends in junior and senior high school, but those cliques and social barriers of adolescence sadly separated them. Happily, they reconnected at their high school reunion 50 years later and have renewed their friendship. As we age, friends become more and more important, and connecting with friends old and new is the cure. We plan to include just a short snippet from our interview with Pete, but he is such a great storyteller with endless amusing anecdotes about living and working in a small town and his love of animals that we decided to just let it roll. Here's my conversation with Pete Kiesling.
Hi, Pete Kiesling. How are you?
Better than most, not as good as some, and nobody seems to care.
Yeah, except those of us doing whatever we're doing.
Pete, the topic of this episode is friendship.
Well, that's a good one.
So what is your definition of friendship?
I think friendship is multifaceted. There isn't one single thing that makes somebody a good friend. For me, it's somebody who, whenever I talk with them, whenever I get together with them, especially when I get together with them, when we finish our visit, it's always a good feeling when I'm going back home. And so I think that would be one way to describe it. Somebody you can depend on too, somebody that you can confide in. Friendship comes in lots of different shapes and forms. Certainly the closest best friend I have is my life partner, and she and I have been together for some 45 years.
Who was your first friend that you remember?
When I was very young, my family moved to Portland, Oregon. We were out looking at the front lawn, and across the street was a little boy out with his parents, and they were doing some gardening. And out of nowhere, he yells across the street, "Hey, how are you?" And I was the shy little five-year-old, and I looked at him and turned my head. My mom said, "Come on now, just say hi to him." So I don't know what I said. But anyway, we went back and forth a little bit. And that was the beginning of a very, very intense friendship that lasted the 2 years that we lived in Portland. His name was Stevie. And oh my gosh, we were best buddies almost instantaneously that day. And we got together to play almost every day. We were blood brothers. We didn't get into too much trouble together. We tried to get into trouble, but about the worst of it was taking some of our older brothers' things, and we traded their toys.
Are you still friends today?
Sadly, I lost track of him, and we lost track of his family. We moved up to Seattle for a short time, and I never had a friendship in Seattle that was quite the same. And we were there for 3 years, after which my father was to be transferred to Chicago. And he said, no, we're a California family. We're going to go back to California. And when we moved back down into California, that's where I made my friendships that were solid, that lasted with me to this day. I can count a few people that are very, very good friends that I met when I first moved into Palo Alto, California. There are different types of friendships, and a lot of that depends on what your favorite activities, hobbies, whatever it is you do, those friends are going to have the same matching interests. But friendship can also be where you have met somebody that you never intended to see again, but you ended up working with them on a project. You ended up spending some time with them. And then maybe months later, you get a call, you get together with this person, and you start talking about the things that you did a few months ago. And from there, it grows. I think probably for me, the friendships that I developed that lasted the longest, other than my wife, would be with those people that I met in middle school, junior high school is what we called it back then, and in high school. Those are some very memorable times.
But then you moved out of Palo Alto.
Well, I always wanted to live out in the country, and I always wanted to do a mixed veterinary practice. So I'll put a plug in for a book here. All Creatures Great and Small by James Herriot is a fabulous read. And if anybody ever wants to know what a mixed practitioner veterinarian does, what I did for 35 or more years, read that book. It's very entertaining. It's also very factual and tells a lot about the local characters. Wanting to live out in the country, we stumbled on a 3-acre parcel that had a house with a hole in the roof and a broken window and a door that didn't close. And we decided to put in an offer, and lo and behold, it became ours. And so now you get this property and you've got a couple of barns. To heck with a house. Put an extra blanket on the bed when it's cold at night because of that broken window and that hole in the roof. You can fix that up someday.
That's a far cry from Palo Alto. Living in a small town, you must have run into some really interesting characters. Who is the most unusual friend you made?
The most unusual friendship that I have had would probably be with a gentleman that just passed away at the age of 98. He grew up in our little town, and he served in World War II, and then established a country store in our small town. And in that store, you could buy a pair of jeans, you could get some pots and pans for your kitchen, or you could get a wrench that you needed for your garage. That store had everything. And when I met him, he was about 65, and he had just sold his store. He and I met through my business, and we hit it off because he liked to go to the flea market, and I'm a flea market junkie. That was the beginning of 30-some-odd years of friendship. And we would go to the flea market after we had a cup of coffee and a donut, of course. We had quite an age difference and quite a different view of politics and of certain people. Yet he intrigued me. He was somebody who was always willing to give me some sage advice about doing business. And we started our own veterinary office and ran our own business here in our small town for some 35 years. And he helped me in the beginning with identifying some of the characters in our town. I'll never forget when we got to talking one day about a family that was really having a difficult time financially. And in a small town, a lot of people know about each other, probably more than they should know. So I mentioned to him that I had seen Mrs. J, and she had a sick kitty cat, and she wanted me to take care of it, and she didn't have any money. And Bill asks me, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, I started taking care of the cat, and I intend to continue. I just don't know how far to take this, because she doesn't have any money, and I was happy to let some people pay me over time with my business. But I don't want to get her into a predicament where she won't be able to afford to pay it off later on. He said, well, I can tell you one thing about that family. They are the most honest that there is, and she'll pay you back. Do whatever has to be done, but make that kitty cat healthy again. And I did, and she did as he described. That's just one example of what that man did for us. He did so much for my wife as well. He was retired from that country store that he had, and he was talking to her one day, and he says, you know, I haven't got much to do lately, and I've got my woodworking shop. You got anything you want me to make? And Peg said, well, I've been looking at this garden swing. And he said, let me take a look at the plans. And she said, well, there aren't any plans. It's just a drawing. And he took it home, and he built us this swing that lasted in our backyard for, oh my gosh, 25 years at least. The wood started to finally get weak. When I was doing home repairs, he caught me a couple of times cutting corners. One time I was changing a fuse box, and I found an old, dirty old fuse box, and I was going to put that one in, and he came over and he said, what are you doing there, Junior? I said, well, this is a fuse box. This other one that I have here, the circuit breakers, it's just old and rusty, and I'm going to put this one in. And he said, I don't think too much of that. That was one of his favorite sayings when he didn't like something. I don't think too much of that.
I know you're a vet. I don't know if you're still a practicing vet. Are you?
I don't have my shingle out on the door anymore. Now it's just kind of winding down and taking care of the neighbors' cats and dogs and once in a while a goat or a lamb or whatever they have in their backyard.
We had Catherine Ryan Hyde on our podcast. She's the New York Times bestselling author. She wrote Pay It Forward, which became a motion picture. And we asked her about friendship, and she said that she's pretty much a loner and that her closest friends are her animals. She has a dog and a cat, and she has a horse and a miniature horse. And you can see by things she posts online and all that, that she just dotes on these animals. As a vet, what do you think about friendships with animals?
Animals are so important to human health. Even for people who are gregarious and people who get along with other people so easily, animals are just a boon to good health, both mental and physical. It's been shown in so many different studies, done so many different times. For people who are less likely to have multiple friends, they become even more important, and sometimes to a fault. I saw that in practice. I had some people who were truly, you could almost call at least one woman that we had for a client a hermit. She did not want anybody to come to her place. She was really a character, and she called me out reluctantly one day because she had a sick calf. The calf was pretty darn sick when I saw it, but it was a pretty simple problem, which upset her because she was a very smart lady and she knew how to take care of them. But this one, somehow it slipped through the cracks. And so I think part of her concern was that she felt like I might look upon her as being not very smart. And I was given some warning by my boss. I'd only been out of school for a year or so. And he said, you know, be careful with her. She's an interesting case. And he described her. So after I determined what the problem was, and I went out with some medication, and she met me when I got, what are you doing here? I'm going to come in and get that. I'm not paying you to come out a second time. And I said, well, I'm not charging you to come out a second time. It just so happens I was down the street seeing one of your neighbors about four properties down. I saw your truck. And I said, yeah, I was down there and I was taking care of some other animals. And I thought I would do you a favor and bring the medication over and I'll let you give it. I don't have to give it. Well, while you're here, you might as well. And I did. And the calf was really sweet. It was easy to do. And lo and behold, the next time she had some kind of a problem, she asked if I could be the vet to come out and do it. And my boss, who was in his late 60s, had a cigar in his mouth. He always had a cigar, unlit cigar in his mouth all day long in that clinic. And then he would smoke it outside at the end of the day. But he looked at me with a cigar and he says, well, you won over a big one here. And so I got to see Leora all, I didn't see her very often because she didn't want people out there. You know, it was one of those things where these animals, they meant a lot to her and they were well cared for. I did see her underwear hanging on a line one time when I was out there and didn't want to, but the little pig that we were chasing ran out into the backyard. And anyway, she just was a true character, and these animals were everything to her.
Mark Twain said that the more I learn about people, the more I like my dog. And you said something last time we spoke about how wonderful it is when you've had a terrible day and to walk in that front door.
That's right. You can have the worst day of your life. Your boss fired you. Not only didn't fire you, but told you what a schmuck you were. And as you're coming home, you talk to somebody that you hoped would listen. Maybe it was your mother or your father. if you're a young person, and I don't have time to talk to you right now, everything's gone wrong. You walk in the door and your dog comes up wagging its tail, and it's in their eyes. It's not just that wag of the tail. It's in their eyes and their facial expressions. They can read our facial expressions. Dogs can anticipate what we're going to do. They get to know patterns that of our daily activity that we don't even know we're doing, but they meet you, they greet you, and at least for a moment, all of the harshness of the day is gone. And I think cats do the same. We laugh about this all the time. Cats are different than dogs, but mainly they're different in the fact that they want to do things on their own terms. And you know, you can come in and I can walk in the door right now and Lulu can meet me, but she's not going to come running up to me and let me pet her and maybe give a quick lick to my hand or if I lean over on my cheek. She's going to walk away with her tail up in the air, kind of showing off that, you know, I'm home. I'm glad you're here. Let me show you what I've been doing today or something. Like, I don't know what's going on in her head, but it's always on her terms. And that's typical of all the cats I've had in life. I'm often asked if I have a favorite animal, and I can tell people that I've had so many different animals, so many different critters, and each one of them has been a blessing and enjoyable, and I don't really have any favorites because it's hard to measure that.
Yeah. So what's the story with Milton Berle?
Well, we had clients that sometimes wanted to get rid of a critter. So we had a chance to get some critters. So I came home with a goat one day, and we had a couple of little pigs and all this different animals. But there also was an Adopt-a-Burro program put on by the federal government. And these were horses and burros that were coming out of the high desert down in Southern California. And I thought that was the best thing in the world. I've always wanted to have a burro because when I was in scouts as a kid, we used burros to carry our food as we backpacked those 50 or 75 mile hikes. So I signed up for an Adopt-a-Burro, and we ended up getting a female that was pregnant. And she was truly a wild critter. She was a wild burro. She was scared of me, and she was nasty. She kicked a button off of my shirt one day. He took aim and missed, and she just got a button instead of getting me better than that. But she was pregnant, and when it came time for her to deliver her baby, it was not presenting properly. And having the training that I got from Davis, I went out. She was laying down in our pasture, and she couldn't get up. She was actually partially paralyzed, fortunately just temporarily. But it allowed me to get behind her because I never would have been able to do this if she was mobile. She would have run away from me or struck at me with either her front or back feet. But instead, she just laid there while I lined up this baby burro's feet and got its head in line. And she started pushing, and it came out just as simple as could be. Thus was born a little cute baby burro who was in my arms immediately as I picked him up and cleaned him off and carried him over to be with his mother up in the front. She licked him, and you know what? She actually looked at me like, you son of a, you know what? I thank you anyway, but I don't like you. I mean, there was real mixed emotions in her eyes. You could see that. Anyway, I brought the baby over to the window, and Peg came out and greeted the burro, and she said, I got the perfect name for him. It's Milton. And I said, that's great, Milton Burro. And that was great. She had a little rabbit named Jack Bunny, and that's about as far as we ever got with the Hollywood names, but it was fun.
Did you ever have a friendship that didn't end well?
Yes, I did. A regrettable experience, and it was in junior high school. And when we were in junior high school, there was a few of us that were pretty musically inclined. And our teacher came up to us one day, and there was five of us, and he said, I'd like to start a Dixieland band. Would you guys be interested? I think each one of you could be a good contributor to this? And we all said yes. And I became extremely close friends with two of the people in that group, and I was very good friends with the rest of them. And then one day got wind of a joke that was going around, of which I was a part, and being a naive, let's put it this way, stupid little kid, and somebody told a joke. It was an ethnic joke, and he took it personally and said, "I'm never talking to you again." And I thought he was kidding, and he wasn't. And we had only been friends for a short time, but we shared a very important part of my life and his life. He went on to be a professional musician. I wanted to be a professional musician back in those days. And I tried everything in my power to, I approached him directly and I apologized. And I said, I had no idea that it was so wrong what I did. And I feel terrible about this. And he basically blew me off and didn't want to talk about it, and told several other people that I was an insensitive, nasty, all kinds of different words. And that still sticks with me to this day. And it really hurt me that I opened my little, young, stupid, ignorant mouth and said a few things that shouldn't have been said. And it broke up a friendship. It disrupted that band for a short time. But
it's interesting because it brings up a quote that actually we came across that said that the route to happiness is to accept people as they are, not as we wish them to be, to see them in the true light of day and still love them. That is the mark of a true friend. So I think friendship, when you're really young, if we don't have the tools available to us yet to understand something like that, and therefore we end friendships that maybe would have lasted a lifetime.
Maybe so. But, you know, when we're young, we also have other influences that are, they turn out to be artificial. There's the proverbial cliques that occur with groups in junior high school and high school. You know, oh, boy, that's the in crowd over there. They'll, you know what they do and all that sort of thing. And I think that that's what can inhibit or just prevent a friendship from developing. And, you know, there's somebody that you and I both know that I would never been able to be friends with him in high school because he was an athlete and I wasn't. And I didn't think that I could be accepted in his group of friends because I didn't have the athletic prowess that he had. And I think that that changes. Certainly it changes as we get older and we find out that, you know, being a stud athlete doesn't really matter. Being a great musician doesn't really matter. Being a good veterinarian doesn't matter. It's the friendships, it's the people you meet, it's the respect you learn and the respect that you gain by learning it as you give people respect. And you can put the word love in there as well. I'd like to think that one of the reasons that I had such an enjoyable career as a veterinarian is that, oh God, I used to hear this all, you do this because you love animals, right? That's a small part of it. There's a lot of small parts that make this into a career. And part of it is that I enjoy animals. Part of it is that I love fixing things. And no, I'm not working on an engine of a Volkswagen. I'm taking care of a living being. And I love seeing them walk out the door with their tail wagging. But I also enjoy people. And this goes back to what you and I were just talking about, Julian, where, you know, people and their animals, it's family and it's important to them. And I recognize that. And I used to emphasize to people that they need to understand what's wrong or what's right with their pet, whether it be a horse, a miniature horse or a full-sized horse or a Clydesdale, one of those big ones, or it might be a cow. How could somebody have a cow for a pet? Believe me, they do. And the cow knows them. And the cow loves to see them and loves to have them out there with him or her. This is why I did what I did for so many years. I think that we stumble into friendships sometimes, but sometimes it's like Stevie. When Stevie first saw me when I was 5 years old, he started that friendship. I probably wouldn't have because I was too shy. but he helped me develop my personality. The fella in junior high school that cut me off, that just wanted nothing to do with me after I opened my immature, foolish mouth, that taught me a lesson. I became more sensitive because of that. I learned to not despise anyone just because of who they were. I have people I don't care for, but it's who they are, what they do, not who they are or who they hang out with. It's what they do that makes me either enjoy being with them or not, or just avoiding their companionship or their friendship.
You made a distinction a little while ago between associates and friends. What is that distinction to you?
Well, there's certain people that we see sometimes on a day-to-day basis, sometimes week-to-week, that are associates. We either work with them, or we see them at church, or we belong to some group, the school board or PTA or whatever. Those are associates. And some of them can become friends, true friends. And friendship is built on sharing moments where you identify with somebody, where it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. We laugh together. Being with that person makes me feel good. And me being with that person makes them feel good. And we enjoy each other's company enough that we're going to get together again next week or next month. And we have friends that we send a Christmas card to every year. We don't see them at all. We haven't seen them in 4 or 5 years. I would love to reignite the friendship with them. One was a roommate of mine in college, but he lives in Colorado. We're out here. I don't know that I'll ever see him again, but to see his picture on a Christmas card, and I think he feels the same way when he sees ours, is enough to just make us remember how much fun we had together and what a great life it was for that year when we shared a house.
So you recently went to your 50th high school reunion in Palo Alto, and I think you actually were on the organizing committee. What do you think is the value of a high school reunion, especially 50 years later?
People have asked me, why do you want to go to your 50th high school reunion? What's the value in going to your 50th high school reunion? 50 years out of school. And the answer to that, I think, is pretty simple. I want to see what they look like, and I can do that if there's just pictures, but I want to hear what their adventures have been. I want them to tell me what they've done for a living. There are two members of our high school class that went to the same veterinary school that I went to. We actually had not been seeing much of each other since we got out of school 40 years ago. And it was great to see them. We've gotten together since. I get to see and meet people, for example, yours and my mutual friend. We've struck up a friendship. We don't live in the same community, but I think if we did, we'd probably get together once in a while and share a few lies as we told each other of all of our great conquests and things we did. But the high school reunion is one of those things where all of a sudden you see somebody and there they are with that group that you remember they were in. And now I can go over and I can say, how are you doing? And they see me and they go, Pete, how are you doing? And all the preconceived feelings about the cliques,
the boundaries are gone. Yeah,
that's the right word. Yep. So that's the beauty of it.
Rob wants me to say that the linebacker loves you as a friend, by the way. Regrets cliques. Reunion allowed him to cross those lines. What about friendships for people our age? Is friendship, as we grow older, easier?
Friendships at an older age are extremely important in my mind, because for people who no longer are going to work and being with associates, some of whom become friends, I think it's important that they have friends that they can spend time with so they don't sit in front of the television set and just waste their time and become, you know, stuck in a rut, so to speak.
I know there was a relationship you talked about with a guy that you worked with that was very kind of,
yeah,
I guess he was another vet.
He's a veterinarian. He's as sharp a vet as I've ever worked with. Started in kind of a strange place because I had a growing business and I had too much work. So I was looking for a replacement or a new veterinary associate to work with me. And this guy comes in the door one day. He's on vacation in California. He's from the Midwest. And he said, "I just know what a place looks like around here." And we had this funky building we were in at the time. And I said, "Well, it just so happens we want to hire somebody. Where are you a graduate?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I graduated about in the Midwest." And so he spent about an hour. And as luck would have it, he starts working with us. And he got very frustrated when things didn't go the way he wanted them to. And, you know, we would talk about how we might treat a particular case, a particular illness that a dog might have. What do you do when a dog has pancreatitis? What do you do with a dog that has chronic obstructive lung disease, something like that? And he would come up with an answer would be different than mine. And I'd say, "Huh, that's interesting." And then we had a couple of arguments over the first couple of years, and I thought he was going to move on. And it's kind of a blur after that. I don't know exactly what happened, but we began to go to continuing education seminars together, and we began to see each other for office Christmas parties and, you know, whatnot. We were in the 4th of July parade, and I was the front end of the horse, and he was the back. No, I was the back end of the horse, actually. I was the horse's ass. That's right. We started to share some fun times. And over the course of the next 15 to 20 years, we became friends. And now he and I get together every week now. He's still working. And he and I get together every week to have a beer if it's at the end of a day, or to have a cup of coffee and breakfast together in the local cafe. And that friendship, he's 10 years younger than I, that friendship is so important to me because of the age difference. And I need somebody young like that. He's got a wicked sense of humor. I wish I could remember half the things he says, and I wish I could come up with stuff that he comes up with. And he enjoys my company for whatever reason. I don't understand it. It's the same. I don't know why my wife is still with me these days sometimes from the things I do.
Do you think people like him help to make people our age feel more alive and youthful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He makes me feel like a kid sometimes. I was just down at my workshop, which is my old hospital barn that we used for treating horses and cattle. And when that camel was in here that time, it was a camel that had given birth and the baby calf needed a quick surgery, which we did. And camels are nasty animals. And I was supposed to leave early that day, and he knew it. And he said, "How's the camel doing?" And I said, "She's doing okay. We're going to get the owner down here. She's starting to kick at the walls of the barn, and I don't want her to do any damage to the barn. And we got to get her out of here." And he said, "Well, you're not going to put me on her, are you? I don't have to take care of her, do I? What if that doesn't get down here? Hey, relax. You're not going to have to do it." He said, "Good. I don't want to do it." But we still laugh about that. And every time we get together, we talk about some of the goofy stories that we've come up with over the years. And he'll never write a book. I probably never would write a book, but he has the best way of telling a story that just, he can just captivate an audience of a small group of people talking about the mishaps of the country veterinary practice.
Have you come to realize that intergenerational relationships have an importance in life?
I truly believe that. And I'll go back to my 98-year-old friend, Bill. Not only did we go to the flea market on Sundays, we also got together for a cup of coffee or a glass of wine at least twice a week, because he lived about a mile and a half from where we live. And so he was truly a very close friend of mine. And one of the things he told me, two things he told me that were related. One is, the older I get, the tougher it gets, because many of my friends have passed away, and one by one, the rest of them are going. And there's going to be some day when I'm the last one and I won't have any friends. And the other part of it was, you know, Pete, you should try to cultivate friendships with people who are younger than you, so that you have somebody like I who is younger with me. And I'm glad you're here, and you have no idea how important you are to me. And I remember when he said that to me, I said, oh, shut up. You're going to make me cry. And he said, it's okay. And he was a tough old goat. I saw him cry twice. What brought him to tears was when he found out that his grandson had passed away from an accident. And the other was when his 11-year-old hunting dog had to be euthanized. She was old. Her time had come. She was failing. And it was time to do what had to be done. And that was to put her to sleep. He was a train wreck that day. He was an absolute, it brought him to his knees. And that's why I loved that guy that much. He was sensitive and tough. And he taught me how important it was to have friends that would help in your time of need. And then what you just said, having intergenerational friends, as I mentioned a little bit ago, I'm cultivating a friendship right now with an associate who's 10 years younger than I. We worked together for 25 years and we get together once a week for a cup of coffee or in the afternoon, maybe for a beer, a glass of wine. And I enjoy his company just as much as I think Bill and I enjoyed the company back in those days. And I think it's important to have those friendships because otherwise down the road, if I'm the last one surviving of my age group, I'm going to be sitting around with the walls to talk to. I'm not good. I'm not good with artificial intelligence and computer games and all that sort of stuff. I'm better with people than I am with the machines.
And, so you would say you're a people person, right?
Yes. Yeah. Bluntly. So yeah.
That,
yeah.
And would you say that that's obviously an advantage in making friends in life?
I think so.
Well, I agree with you on that myself, and I think Rob does too. But I'm aware that a lot of our listeners, for whatever reason, they're alone. And I think when you're alone, it gets even harder to reach out and make friends. What kind of advice would you give to someone about what to do to create new friends?
That first step can be tough, no question about it. But go to some social gathering. And try to let your barriers down. Be safe, be careful, but get to know somebody. And, you know, it starts right at home, too, talking over the fence to a neighbor. The next thing you know, you're going to get together with them for a Saturday afternoon. Things like that get it started. But to not go out and make an effort, to not go out and try to start a new friendship when you've lost most of your friends is I think it's just fatal. It's so important to have people to talk to because we as human beings are gregarious social beasts and we need to be able to talk to each other and share stories and tell a few lies, make each other laugh, make each other cry sometimes, you know.
My father was not a very social person, but my mother is a member of the Moose Club. I don't know if you remember the Moose Club at all, but it was a women's group that was kind of the offshoot of the Elks Club. And when she was on her own, she would always go to the local coffee shop almost daily and sit there and have coffee and a piece of pie or something and become friendly with the people who went there. And it became a social circle for her.
Yep.
When I would go home to visit, she'd go, oh, well, we have to go to the coffee shop.
That's great.
So I could introduce you to all my friends. And I was like, oh, okay, Mom, you know.
Yeah, no, no, that's where it all starts. Yeah.
And she was as happy as can be. So hopefully I'll have some of that as I get older. I think I do.
Well, church is a good place to start if you are so inclined. Coffee shops are even better in my mind because – you know, you get a cup of coffee into some of these people and their inhibitions drop down a little bit and they start talking a little bit and you can exchange stories. I did about 12 years of public television in San Jose, a show called Pet Puri. Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock, get a clean shirt and a tie and grab either a cat or a dog because, you know, it's always best to have an animal on a show like that. And I would have Pebbles, the bulldog, or Rumpy, the cat, sitting in my lap, and we ad-libbed the whole show. And as we're doing that, I felt Pebbles, the bulldog, kind of a hiccup kind of a thing, and she proceeded to cough up a very scant piece of underwear. And I looked at it, and I remembered that when I picked her up, I had gone into the house, and I heard my 14-year-old daughter yelling, "God damn it, Pebbles, get out of my room," you know, and just screaming at the dog and using all kinds of foul language. And so I went ahead and I told the staff at the show, I said, somebody get me a Ziploc baggie. And one of the gals that worked there, the sound engineer, looked like she was going to throw up herself. But anyway, I took it home and I showed it to Sarah. It was a little bit more than a G-string, but not much. And she looked at me and I said, "When did you start wearing underwear like this?" And she said, "Where did you get that?" And I said, "Pebbles gave it to me." And I just want to know, answer my question. And she's, "I hate that fucking dog, Dad. I hate that dog." And to this day, she still denies that it was that scant a piece of underwear. But the story is better that it, and it was. It was quite scant.
That's like from a movie or something. It was really good talking to you. I appreciate you hanging in there with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Based on a lot of the stuff you were talking about, I think we should do an episode on just pets.
And you'll get great stories from people about their pets.
Really? That's great.
Yeah. I could have listened to Pete for hours. I hope he lifted your spirits as he did mine. If you're interested, you can hear more of Pete's wit and wisdom about our animal friends on his weekly radio call-in show Friday mornings from 7 to 7:30 by Googling Santa Cruz Voice. Talking with Pete reminded me of an old friend I haven't talked to in years. If you have an old friend like that you haven't talked to in a blue moon, maybe you should give them a call and even meet up and rekindle that old connection. We all need that. Personally, I have to thank Pete for validating my own deep affection for animals. I have had many non-human friends in my life. Dogs, cats, birds, dozens of squirrels, and even insects. If you haven't befriended our fellow creatures, you're missing out. Animals are amazing, asking only love, trust, and yes, food and shelter. I have had some of my most meaningful connections in life with those critters, as Pete calls them. We'll be continuing this series, sharing the wonderful thought-provoking comments many of you have sent in. This series relies on your input, and we'd really like to hear your thoughts on what friendship means to you. There's a great app on our website where you can send us a voice recording of your thoughts on friendship just by clicking on the yellow microphone icon that appears on every page and record directly into your computer microphone. Don't worry, if you don't like it, you can start over and we'll edit out those ums and ahs for you. Lastly, as Pete reminded us, friends are people who will help you in your time of need. If you can manage it, please consider donating or sponsoring our podcast to help us keep it going. You can do that by clicking on our donate button on the website at ourgenpod.com. I'm Julian G. Simmons. Thanks for listening.
Unless otherwise noted, all content in this podcast is copyright Unauthorized Films and may not be rebroadcast or reproduced in any form without the express written permission of Unauthorized Films. This podcast may include copyrighted material which has not always been specifically authorized by the copyright owner. This content is used only where it is the specific subject of commentary by us or our guests as part of our effort to advance understanding of issues of social and historical significance. We believe that this constitutes a legal and fair use of the material in accordance with the Fair Use section of U.S. Copyright Law, Section 107, which reads, "The fair use of a copyrighted work for purposes such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, or research is not an infringement of copyright." Further information on this claim of fair use may be found on our website at ourgenpod.com/legal-disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered legal, medical, or professional advice. ArgenPod and Unauthorized Films are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. No artificial intelligence, fake replicas, or unauthorized duplications may be made using any voice in this podcast. Now, will someone please get these damn bees out of here?